What's up, guys? Thanks for tuning into Angler's Happy Hour podcast. The show's off to a great start so far, and we can't thank you enough for all the good reviews on iTunes. This week, Nick is out of the studio. We've got our good friend Alex filling in. Alex Sentner is an accomplished tournament angler on both the salt and freshwater side. We had a great time talking to him. Hope you guys enjoy.
Good thing you don't have any friends in the neighborhood, Josh.
All right, guys, what's going on? This is the first podcast we've done in my garage. We had a nice little spot at Rob's, but he decided to sell his house, and Nick's building a house. So we're doing this in my garage, and we've got Alex here. I introduced him in the intro, but one of our best friends, he's the new Nick. We've called him the new Nick before. Nick calls him the new Nick often because he fishes more tournaments with me now than Nick does. But yeah, Alex has been one of our best friends for like 10 years and hunts with Rob, fishes with Rob, fishes with me all the time. What's going on, man?
Man, it's good to be here. It's in the it's not the podcast room. This is a tackle shop.
The fishing den.
We've moved a lot of tackle to get this table in here to do this podcast, and they say not to do podcasts in like open spaces, and most garages are open spaces, but that's not the case in my garage, is it? It's just a disaster. So we'll see how this goes. Hopefully it sounds all right. What's been going on? I know you guys just got back from a hunting trip. It was Alex's hunt, and you went along, right, Rob?
Well, I kind of went along. I went along for the work. I showed up basically right when they were shooting the deer. So Alex and Les went out and they hunted all morning on Saturday. I didn't get there till, I don't know, maybe 1 o'clock or so. I pulled up to the area where they were. It was like an hour ride in my Polaris Ranger. So pretty gnarly country. And I'm sitting there. I had really no idea where they were. So I'm just sitting there eating some lunch, and all of a sudden I hear a gunshot. So I figured I might as well walk that direction. And I was able to get in on the pack out, which was pretty cool. That deer was on a completely vertical hillside. I mean, we had to tie him to a tree when we were taking care of him, or he would have slidden down the hill. It was pretty nuts, but pretty cool deal. Nice buck too, by the way.
Yeah, Rob's timing was pretty spot on.
We
told him we were going to let him know where we were at, but when we stopped the Ranger, we had no service. So I'm literally like kicking arrows in the dirt to be like, we're this direction. There was quite a bit of country.
You were seriously doing that?
Yeah.
Oh, that's awesome, dude.
But there was a lot of country that direction. So we were worried he was gonna literally, we're sitting there staring at this deer waiting for it to stand up, and we're like Rob's gonna come over the hill and this thing's out of here.
Oh yeah,
you know. So luckily it worked out. But
and what's funny is I walked right up to him. I'm literally standing on a rock, and they're like going to get the deer, and they had no idea I was there. I just stood there, and Les finally actually saw me. It was pretty funny.
What's up, dude?
Yeah, it was pretty funny. I yelled, "Hey, game warden!" But Les didn't hear that, unfortunately. So.
Yeah, Les would have been running.
So, like your last communication with Rob before he showed up, were you pretty sure that you were going to get that you were going to get shot at that deer that day, or was it like
no idea?
No, we had no idea.
No idea. They were just in an area, and then, like I said, I'm sitting at the Ranger. I hear a gunshot. I'm like, cool. So yeah, it was cool. Neat deal. It was your second buck, right?
Yeah, second buck.
Yeah,
biggest one so far. Not a giant, but it was fun. It was interesting. The it was a little preview for Rob Sun's Boyd hunt later in the year. Same unit, but these deer are like 100 pounds, and that was steep, nasty country.
Yeah, they're little deer, thank goodness.
Yeah, we got a little deer, but I mean, it was
the finest game meat out there.
Incredible.
Yeah, it's as good as it gets.
I mean, we were light coming out compared to what we'll hopefully be in a month or so, and it was a little sketchy going on some of those rock slides.
Yeah, because Boyd's got the elk hunt in that same area, and it's like you said, it's tough country, and elk are a heck of a lot bigger, so but yeah. It'd be interesting. Should be fun.
We know what we're in for now.
Yeah, are you gonna have maybe another person, or is it gonna be three?
Oh
guys
no,
again?
We'll have a group. Like
okay,
yeah. We'll get some help because that's a job.
Yeah, no kidding.
And more than likely, we'll be quite a bit further in than what we were on this deal.
Really?
So, yeah.
I remember last year, Alex shot. Was that your first buck last year? Then or this 2 years ago?
Two years ago.
We were supposed to fish a tournament on Saturday, and everything's, you know, it's planned, but Alex is going to go hunt Friday, and it's like, okay, well, you know, if something crazy happens on the hunt, obviously we just won't fish the tournament. And let's just say it was a really long night for you guys. Alex was half dead by the time he got to my house the next morning, and slept most of the way to the lake. He had just like, I mean, he probably couldn't feel his legs, couldn't feel his arms after hauling that thing out of there.
Yeah. How much did you sleep?
Like hour and a half.
Yeah, that's how valuable fishing trips with Josh are, right? Yeah.
Oh, geez, no, dude. I told him not to go, and one of our buddies, I was like, dude, just don't worry about it. It's all good. But I'm glad he did, dude, because he caught a 5-plus pounder.
Nice.
And it was our biggest fish of the day by far, so I needed him in the boat. But one of the guys that was with him, our buddy Scooter, we'll throw Scooter under the bus because we're getting him on the show, so he'll have time to come defend himself. He wanted to camp out, didn't he, dude?
Scooter was ready to die. I was ready to die. Scooter's ready to die, but I wasn't ready to camp on the side of the mountain.
and the tournament. We're done for tonight.
Scooter was supposed to fish the next day, too. He was trying to, he wanted his son to fish with you and for us to just call it quits.
Oh, that's what you're saying. Funny. Yeah, Fisher can fish with Josh.
Yeah, Fisher was going to go fish with Josh, and it ended up working out, though. I think I got home at 11:30, had to deal with the deer, get everything done, and showered, probably slept for an hour and a half, and then went and met you. And
you're on your way to go hunt with Scooter tomorrow, right?
Yeah, I'm going fishing. Yeah.
Oh, really? Yeah. Awesome, man.
Yeah.
Right on.
Yeah, Scooter's daughter has a tag. So we're getting...
Yeah, should be fun.
Yeah, we're getting all over the place. But
thanks for making the time to do this, man, before that. It's awesome.
Oh, yeah, it's a blast.
So how about fishing? What's been going on?
I've had one fishing trip since we got together last. I took a member of the Phoenix Junior Bassmasters out. His name's Robbie. Every year, I like to do some stuff with the club. You know, it's a great club. They've got kids ages 8 up to 14 in the club, and they've been going for a long time. I don't know, at least 15 years probably, maybe longer. That's just a total guess, but as long as I can remember. And every year, the sportsman, one kid in the club gets the sportsmanship award for, you know, having good sportsmanship at the tournaments, but cleaning up after the tournament, being a good sportsman, you know, being just a good all-around sportsman. And the winner gets a fishing trip with me. And this year, Robbie won. So I've done this for 3 years, and I've met three awesome kids doing this every year. Met an awesome kid, and Robbie was no different. We get out there, and he's super outgoing, you know, got a million questions, good fisherman. His dad's fantastic, really supports him, and they've got a boat. They go out on Lake Pleasant almost every weekend. So we go out to Saguaro, and the bite was starting to taper off. We were starting to see the really good summertime bite get into that tough fall transition. And some lakes are better than others when that's going on. Saguaro, it's really good when the grass is strong, but the grass isn't that strong this year. So it's been tough. Didn't really know what to expect. And we didn't get off to a super great start. We caught a couple fish in the morning. But we get on one spot, and Robbie casts his drop shot out there, and he's just literally just dragging it as slow as someone could drag it, patiently, gets a bite, sets the hook, and one of the craziest, most intense fish fights I've ever seen, man. Any time on the boat, you know, over all the years, this was one of the craziest ones, and it was probably a good 3 or 4 minute fight. We've got it on video, and I'll post a link in the show notes to the video where you can see this on YouTube, but he fights this thing to the boat. Remember, it's on a drop shot. It gets him wrapped up in one tree. There's not much wood in this lake, but we're on the one bank that's got like 20 hardwood trees. You guys know what I'm talking about.
Oh, yeah, that's crazy.
And it gets him in a tree, and I'm thinking, oh, no. And he's freaking out, and I'm like trying to keep it cool on the outside. I'm like, it's okay, buddy. He'll swim out. Just keep your line tight. And we get over this tree, and I'm thinking, great. We already saw this thing jump, and it's a toad. And it swims out, and I'm like, thank God. But he's got his drag set very loose because his line's frayed now. This thing just books it to the next tree.
Oh, my goodness.
I'm not kidding, dude.
One to the next.
It swims off a good 30 yards, and what do you know? It's wrapped up in another tree. And you guys are going to think I'm exaggerating, but it's in the video, and you'll see it. We get over it again, same thing. Oh, no, it's going to break off. It's okay, buddy. Just keep your line tight, and you know we'll get him from the other side. This fish swims out again. What does he do, dude? Swims 20 yards into the next tree.
Oh, my goodness.
And, I mean, he swims into the three trees on the bank, and it comes out. And by this point, this fish is so tired, dude. It's almost dead. And it finally just kind of comes up to the surface. We get in the net, and he loses his mind. I mean, you guys saw the reaction. What do you think?
I saw the shorter clip.
Yeah, I saw the short clip.
He lost his mind. It was incredible. Yeah. You guys need to go watch the video because you want to see a kid who's excited about fishing, excited about a fish. That's him.
Nothing better than that appreciation for catching a fish
that's
like
it.
That, you know?
Yeah.
And, you know, guiding all the years I have, I've seen kids that are excited. Not just kids, but people. I mean, some people catch a 7-pounder and be like, oh, okay, let me see another one. But when someone appreciates it like that, it just makes it so much better as someone taking someone fishing when they appreciate it.
100%. It was his second biggest fish of his life, and he was jumping up and down.
That's
It made my day, dude. And yeah, sometimes, and when someone reacts that way, like where they're not so excited about it, you don't get that excited about it, so you forget about it later. But I'm telling you, for like the next 2 days, I'd think about it and just start smiling.
Yeah.
Like, just couldn't hold it back. It
you're
was
never
awesome.
Going to forget that.
Yeah, I won't. Yeah, I mean, there have been a lot of 6.5-pounders in the boat, but none like that one. It was very cool.
Was that his biggest so far?
Second biggest. Second. He had an 8 fishing with Scooter, actually.
Nice.
Yep. I think probably 3 years ago, he said, but that was his second biggest. And I mean, that was a big one. It was one of those fish that we always say, I look bigger than that, but... It was one of those fish that had everything. It had a big head, a big body, and it had a belly, but the belly was a little soft, right? So, like, I don't know. The belly would have been totally stuffed. It probably would have been over 7. But if you look at it in the photo, you're like, wow, that's a big 6.5.
Yeah, that's cool.
But, you know, it was full of shad, you know, not packed full of other stuff, I guess.
How old is Robbie?
I think he's 12.
12?
Cool. Yeah, maybe 13.
So he's in the junior, and then they go to the high school? Is that what it is?
Yeah, and they've got a statewide high school club. There are some high school clubs popping up here in Arizona. We talked about that on a podcast before, how it's getting so big everywhere.
Yep.
We're still trying to build it up here in Arizona. So, yep, even if their high school doesn't have a club, which I told him, I'm like, dude, start it. You know,
you can. Guy.
Absolutely. Yep. And he very well could be. His dad can help him out, and he's got that type of quality where he could be the first guy to do it and start their club. So I think they should. But even if not, they've got a statewide club that they can join.
That's cool.
Yeah. It was fun, man. It was fun to watch. So again, we'll put that link down below. And to keep it on the fishing front, we've got Thanksgiving coming up, and a lot of the stuff we talk about on the show, it seems like we're kind of complaining about a fish we lost, complaining about a scenario where we got in trouble on the water, complaining about this. Thanksgiving is about being thankful for stuff. So without getting too sappy on this, I want to talk about, you know, just some scenarios on the water, whether it's fish that you shouldn't have caught, you know, weather, stuff like that, where you were just like, wow, you look back and say, wow, that actually really went my way. And it could have gone the other way. And it's so easy. Like, you're at a tournament or talking to your buddies around the campfire after fishing, and everyone's always like, oh man, I lost this fish, I lost that fish. But no one's like, oh dude, I got so lucky on this scenario, and I got so lucky on that one. You know, the hook falls off in the net and you just take it for granted. I caught him. But,
so do you have any fish catches that you can say you're thankful for then?
A few, man.
Yeah.
Yeah. And we'll get around the whole table on this one, but I'll start it off. There's one that really stands out to me. This is probably 4 years ago. I was fishing an FLW tournament at Lake Havasu, and it's tough fishing in the wintertime. This is a late winter, early spring tournament. It's hard to get 5 bites out there that time of year. They're going to be big ones, but it's hard to get 5 bites. I draw out like boat 3, and this is the first day. And I'm like, well, on boat 3, I'm starting on a community hole. You know, it's not any part of what I was going to do, but I'm boat 3, so I'm going to start on a community hole and try to catch a lucky big one early. And, dude, I run a couple hundred yards, and I'm casting before they probably have boat 20 out. And on my first cast, I'm hopping a little spoon up off the bottom. It's wintertime, it's cold, and I have one. And I fight this thing to the boat. And it's a toad. And I get up close to the boat. My first lucky part of this was the fish was not hooked in the mouth, which, again, legal in Arizona.
Yep.
That's totally legal. You know, I wasn't sight fishing for it. He went after it, and I just hooked him on the side. So he's not hooked in the mouth. Very lucky to hook him. I get him close to the boat, and my co-angler is sitting there with a net, and the fish comes off while it's in the water. And he's not even close to him with the net. and the fish just lays there stunned on the surface for a good 2 seconds. And my co-angler scoops him up, dude.
That's
and awesome. I'm like, yes!
How big was that fish?
6 pounds. Big Dang. Fish of the day, dude. Big fish of
the day. It's a giant.
Absolute giant.
It didn't hang on through the whole tournament. Joey Uribe ended up catching an 8-pounder on the final day. So he got me on that. But it was big fish of the day. I had big bag of the day, 20-plus pounds, leading the tournament that day. And it was all off that fish. And I got lucky on all three fronts. Or lucky to get boat three. Okay, how many times do you draw a boat 120 and complain?
Yep.
Rarely do you draw a boat three and say, oh, man, I'm so lucky to draw a boat three. This is awesome. And then to actually get to the spot, you know, kind of get the bite, but miss the bite, but get lucky to still hook him somehow. I mean, just lucky all the way around. That one takes the cake, man. I don't know if I have one that was luckier than that.
Not to go off on something completely the other direction, but Havasu, man, I mean, like 6 and 7 pounders were never even spoke of when I fished it. You know, I fished a lot of tournaments there in the 90s, and you're lucky to have a 2-pound average. Now you're talking about catching 20 pounds, you know. It's just amazing how good that lake is.
It's really turned a corner there. Northern strain fish, which is...
But they're getting big.
They're topped out. Like, you won't find a better northern strain average size anywhere in the country. No, you think so, Alex? I mean, you spent a lot of time there, too.
Yeah, I mean, between the habitats, the bluegill, now the gizzard shad in there, it's just exploding.
Is that what it is, the gizzard shad, that's helping the fish get big?
I think the... I mean,
it's
we're
the
seeing
last factor adding to it.
Yep. Okay.
Yeah, I mean, they had the habitat. They've always had the bluegill and everything, but, I mean, they went from shad to... I mean, those gizzards are... Some of them are almost too big, but I think those big fish can eat...
Right.
I mean, they're eating trout year-round, basically, with... I guess if they want to chase gizzards, they can get gizzards. And
I guess I'm thankful
fast.
For gizzard shad in Havasu then.
Yeah, and hey, the stripers are there to control them too. Like, we've seen gizzards get into fisheries
Roosevelt.
Where there were no striper, and it knocked Roosevelt out of balance for 10 years. It was all jacked up.
Yep.
But you go to a lot of the best big bass lakes around the country, and most of them do have gizzard shad. But they either have something to control them, or they've been in there a while, and it's kind of leveled out.
Seems like Roosevelt's leveling out now.
It is, yeah. Sure. What, 10 years or so it took?
Took a while, yeah.
It was crazy. Like, there was a time where you couldn't trust your graph because you saw fish and you're like, it's gizzards, you know? And
there was a ton of 15 or 16-inch gizzard shed in there.
Huge ones. Yeah. Pleasant's got the giant ones now, too, and I'll tell you, Mead's got them. Did you see some when you were at the Open, Alex, the giant gizzards at Mead?
You'd like to weigh in a limit of those gizzard shad.
They're huge, dude.
You could win.
I'm not kidding. They're 5. Yeah. Easily. It's crazy. And you'd kind of see the same thing there, too. You'd see, like, they were in little groups, like 3 to 5. So you'd see, like, a little pack on your graph and be like, and they wouldn't bite. And you'd, gizzard shad, you know.
Are the stripers keeping them in check there? Is there big enough stripers in Mead?
That's a good question, man. I know there are, but I can't say they're keeping them in check, dude. That place is, we went really deep into it on the last episode we published. So we won't go too much into Mead, but I guess it's in check, but it's just a crazy lake to begin with. It's not near as balanced and good as Havasu as far as the health of the fish, in my opinion.
Right on. Well, I kind of went off on a little.
That's good, though, man. It's cool. Yeah. Hey, right, it's on. A fishing show.
Yeah.
So that was one for me. How about you guys, like, as far as a specific fish catch?
I got a couple, but I guess not even a specific fish catch, but we were talking about a few of the tournaments we fished. I think the tournament of Pleasant we fished in, I think it was April that last year. It was just one of those deals where everything went right. I mean, I think you fished a tournament with Nick the weekend before. It was okay, but it wasn't incredible. And we had our spot. We're going to our spot, idling in there. And it was just, it's one of those deals where there's some birds over there. Let's change our mind. Right. And everything goes out the window, and it was the right call. We go over there and, we fish around. We caught a whole bunch of stripers. When those stripers were gone, I mean, we caught several of our key fish on a bait we'd never thrown before. I mean,
in a tournament. Yeah.
In a tournament.
Dude.
I mean, it was just one of those deals where it's like, hey, we think this could work here if we get in this right situation. And we went with it. We caught one of the big fish of the tournament. I mean, caught several of our way fish. And then when that dried out, I mean, we went out, and this was kind of when I knew, like, Josh was working on a little different level last year. This is a lake he's guided on forever, a long time back in the day. And he's like, I've never fished here before, but this stuff looks good. and we stop, catch a 3-pounder. I'd never fished here before, but it looks good. Whack another 2.5-pounder. We culled three to Josh culls 3 times in the last hour, and we win by like 20 hundredths. And it was just one of those deals where it's like we trusted ourselves throughout the day. So all those fish, all those decisions, it was something to be thankful for. You know, you just sometimes it works out, sometimes it doesn't, but it was just one of those days where almost
everything worked out.
Everything worked out.
Literally every possible thing. And we got lucky. And afterwards we're like, yeah, we know what's up. We did all that.
You say lucky. I don't think it was lucky.
That's what I told so many people. I'm like, when Josh had his run, I mean, second AOI and stuff like that, I was like, I knew it was different. It takes something a little bit special to go on a lake you're so familiar with. I've never fished here before, but it just feels right. And then it works out. You know, it's something not all of us can do, but
I can't either right now. I need to get back into that headspace.
Trust yourself, because it worked. I mean, that particular day, it didn't matter. It seemed there were some slow periods and everything, but every time it came to make a crunch decision, it seemed like we made the right one. And
he was in the zone for sure.
He was,
dude. But Alex ended up catching like 3 of our big fish that day on a bait that's not going to ever make it onto this show. So big props to Alex for having that bait and doing it and catching those fish, man. It was, and the crazy thing about those fish that he caught on that when he got on that roll was he mentioned the stripers. It was all striper, you know, all striper. We pulled in there and caught like 5 striper in a row. And we eventually had to bail on it, but we got away from it. And we're like, dude, like, think about all the bait that is over there. And think about the lack of bait that's over here. Why don't we just go back? And we went back, and it was just all giant largemouth. It was so strange, you know, such a it was a unique deal. But we easily could have not gone back, for sure. Probably should have never left, but you know, who knows? It worked out.
Yeah, it all worked out in the end, but it was an interesting deal. Those stripers backed out, and it went straight stripers to a group of large. I mean, every cast getting bites there, and you know, whacking a couple of our good fish right on that spot. With, you know, we could have, like you said, could have never gone back to.
It's interesting, yeah. And were there gizzard shad there, dude? Were there gizzard shad around? Do you remember?
I don't think it was even the gizzards.
They were just,
I think,
big
the
thread fins, huh?
Big thread fins. Yeah. I mean, the gizzards were in a lot of the other arms of the lake. I mean, like, you couldn't hardly even fish like a moving bait and stuff without snagging one a couple weeks before that. But in there, it was just big gizzards, or not big gizzards, but big thread fins. I mean, they were 4 or 5 inches long, it seemed like.
Interesting. When you get that right bait, we talk about this a lot, like, you know, when you line things up right, whether it's by straight luck or you planned it, it's funny to see how things work. Like, sometimes you'll get lucky and catch a 4-pounder here and there in Lake Pleasant, but, you know, and we've seen on all the lakes, like, when you get lucky and like, National Geographic is unfolding right in front of you, like, they're all 4-pounders. And it's just funny how you get around that right forage, and, like, all the fish that you've been looking for around the whole lake are just, like, all right there.
Everything comes together, you know, and it's, you put yourself in the position to get lucky like that by working hard, you know. So
1 out of every 20 times it happens.
Yep. Well, for you maybe a little more often than us, but
I don't think so, but yeah, that's cool, man. Yeah. How about the one at Roosevelt, dude? We're just gonna get on here and brag about all 2 of the tournaments that we've won together, because we have
tripled up on the one, so we can count it as a couple.
Okay.
No. Yeah, I don't know, but yeah, no, that was another one. That was kind of a lucky fish. I mean, we had a couple good ones early. I mean, it was a tough deal. We're fishing. We caught 2 of the right fish, and had a bunch of small ones. But it was just a random deal where we're like, where could we go catch a big one? Where could we go catch a big one? And we're like, that looks like a good spot, right? So we pull up there, and both cast out. We're fishing. Josh like got one. I'm like, sweet. Get the net. Go up there. We thought it was bigger than it was.
Straight up dink, dude.
Just straight up dink. I don't know if it was hooked weird or what, but I mean, like, dude, I'm up there with the net. Like, this is a game changer, right? I mean, we're out there. There's people inside of us looking at us like we're idiots. And
how big is the fish?
Like 12 inches.
You know, dude, what I mean? It's not really a big fish spot. We were kind of desperate at this point.
Yeah,
we're like burned through everything, you know?
If we could catch a big fish on this spot, this is the spot on the spot, right? So I'm like, oh, man, we're kind of like, oh, whatever. So I go back, I grab my rod, I pick it up, and I'm just like, I go to come tight, and my rod is just, it's just pulling. I'm like, what the heck? Like, are we drifting? I'm looking around, like, kind of half set the hook and then, like, reel down, set the hook again. And this thing comes up, and in that dirty water, this white fish looked huge. And we're both just, I mean, terrible hook set. Get to the boat. It's surging. We have no clue what's going on. It looked like it was six or seven. Ended up being our big fish of the day, I think a little over five. But, I mean, it bumped us up.
It's a big one at Roosevelt.
I think we won, I think, three different tournaments all. We're in three different ones that same day.
Yeah.
And we won all of them. And all of them we wouldn't have won without that last minute fish. So it was definitely one we were
when the rod was laying on the deck.
It was
dude.
Just laying on the deck. I didn't even believe it when I picked it up. I was just like, oh, I must be hung or something. But it was just weird enough to give it a little half hook set, and it freaked out. So
pretty funny. I don't know if this has anything to do with it. And it's going to sound like a cheesy little sponsor plug, but it was on a Maxent worm, Magnum hit worm. And you just wonder if that bait's sitting on the bottom, whether it's Maxent or some other type of scent. You just wonder if it's a bait laying on the bottom like that, if having scent on it helped you get that bite. I have no idea.
I think it was, it was something about that worm, because we were mixing up that shaky head with some other stuff, and we threw a lot of different worms in practice, and one of our other big fish earlier in the morning came on that
same
bait.
It was the bait that
day,
for sure.
And they both had it choked. I mean, they were not spinning that thing out. It was almost like cut that bait off and just give it to them. But I don't know. Yeah, it wasn't moving, I can tell you that much. Just laying there on the bottom, and that fish ate it.
We definitely didn't get up and tell anyone that day that we caught that fish. I like that, though.
No, you act like you planned it all out.
Oh, yeah, dude, for sure.
Of course.
Three giants and two little ones, yeah. But it was good.
I can think of a fish that's similar to that. It was years ago on Lake Shasta in Northern California. I ended up second in a pretty good-sized tournament, and I was pretty stoked about it. But now I look back, I mean, it was one fish that did it, basically. And it was almost a six-pound spot. And it was doing something completely different than what I was doing the entire day, or the entire 3 days for that matter. I was Carolina rigging and catching a little bit better than average spotted bass. And that was back when it was a pro-on-pro draw. And I had caught a limit. I had an okay limit. And my guy's like, hey, we need to go do my deal. I'm like, well, where do you want to do it? And so we ran up one of the arms, and the wind was blowing. And he didn't really feel comfortable running the boat, but he wanted to fish this area. So I just picked up a jerk bait and started going down the bank and ended up catching that giant spot. Biggest spot I've ever caught by far.
Six pounds.
Almost 6 pounds. It was like 5'10".
That's a toad, dude. Giant. And what was your total weight that day? Do you remember?
It was minimal. I mean, for having a fish that big, it was under 12 pounds, I think. But that was pretty typical back in the day at Shasta.
Yeah.
You know, if you caught a pound and a half or versus a bunch of pound and a quarters, you were better off. Yeah, I mean, that's just obviously.
So think about what a 6 pounder does, huge. Dude, when that quarter pound of fish makes a difference.
Yep. So it jumped me way up in the standings, and then the last day I caught him okay again too. But it was just funny how, you know, that one fish changes the whole thing. But now I look back too, and the guy that won the tournament the first day had a 5 and a 7, and just little teeny bags after that, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah, one fish.
That's tournament fishing. I mean, no matter what, no matter how much, again, you're trying to put yourself in the position, and you were, because you backed it up with everything else. But, man, you got that lucky break, and you capitalized on it.
Yeah.
And
that was just, you know, it's luck, but I'll take it, right?
Oh, dude, yeah. I mean, that's sometimes you, not even just on one fish, but you look back, and you could have picked that spot, or that spot to start on, or you pull up on a random stretch on a bank, and then boom, dude, like, You sometimes you get lucky and you pull up on the right one, and it's happened the other way too, where you've had that decision and you start on one, and the dude that starts on the other one's the one that loads up.
Yep.
So, and when it's going your way, it seems like it happens every time like that. And when it's not, it seems like it never happens that way, but that's funny. That's a gigantic spot, dude.
Yeah. And another fish was, at Lake Mead years ago also. And I was flipping in the tournament, and I wanted to go from point A to point B, so I picked up a spinnerbait and caught a 2-pounder just running down the bank, right? And that, again, I won that tournament by 5 ounces. And the difference.
Take
right
that
there.
Fish away, dude. If you would have cranked up your motor and idled around,
I wouldn't have caught it.
Yep.
Yep.
Second place.
Yep. So
it's crazy.
Kind of weird how that works, but that's just, you know, I guess that's the lucky break you need when you want to win, or when you win.
Sure.
No, obviously you want to win, but when you win, that you get that lucky break. Yeah. So
it's that age old saying, man, keep your bait wet, keep your line in the water, because things like that happen.
Yep.
You know, you're retired, man, sling that line out there and let that thing, let your drop shot or jig sit on the bottom while you're, getting rigged up or something, or just like you, man, there's no sense in like be casting if you're going from spot to spot.
Yep. Yeah. But that's, I mean, that's just the outdoors. That's how it works. I mean, you, if you're out there, things are going to happen, right? If you're,
yeah,
I mean, it's like when you're out there deer hunting, you might get just a glimpse of a deer and he beds down and you wait a while and he stands back up. If you don't get that initial lucky glimpse of him, you're not going to know that they're there, you know.
100%. So
I think that was similar to what happened to your deer, right? Did Les see it and you didn't see it at first?
Yeah, I was moving. We were glassing kind of different angles on the same.
Right, and was it bedded when he saw it, or was it?
He saw it just get up for just a. I mean,
yeah. So it's just that
they were just getting up to move their beds. I mean, it just got to that point. It was like 1 o'clock in the afternoon where it was a west facing hill, and they'd been shaded all morning long. That sun just barely got to the point where it made him uncomfortable, and it was literally getting up. We Les saw the deer. It actually had a couple other deer with it, but I mean, before I could even get set up to shoot, that thing laid back down, and I mean, we could not see it. I mean, it was one of those things like we're playing the head games with ourselves. Is it even still there? Did we scare it? Is it gone? And I mean, we're staring right at it on the other side of a bush. But I mean, had you not seen it and just that glimpse where it got up for 30 seconds and moved, no, I mean, we're ready to get out of there, move on, or you know, whatever the story is. But next thing you know, I mean, it stands up and it's game over. But even in that short little window where you literally watched it walk behind a tree,
you just
doubting
yourself.
Like, no, it snuck out of there. It's not there.
It's
what it is.
It's funny how it works, man. Right on. Okay, so how about, I don't know if I can think of like a specific one, but how about when you look back at some of the fish that you've caught when you thought you were snagged? And this is another one that you've heard a million times, like, oh, I thought, you know, you're hearing the big fish story and someone's just brutally honest. Dude, I thought I was snagged at first and it ended up being a fish. And it used to happen a lot more to me before we had like fluorocarbon and really sensitive rods. I can't tell you when I was a kid, every big fish I caught, dude, I was with mono. You never would feel the bite. So you'd just be like thinking you were stuck and then it would start to slowly swim out to deep water, your line. But it'll still happen on occasion where you'd be like trying to pop it off or whatever. And then all of a sudden it's like, oh crap, dude, this is a fish. And it's almost always a big one, right?
It's never happened to me. I would never admit that.
You must use really good rods, man.
I just won't admit it.
You just won't admit it.
But no, guiding, you see it all the time. I mean, a lot of people think they're snagged and it's actually a fish pulling. It's like, you know, set the hook. And it's happened to everybody. I mean.
Like, hey, I think you got a bite. I think you got a bite when it's pulling drag.
Right. Or jumping.
Oh, look at that. I got one, yeah. Thankfully, with super lines nowadays, you get away with a lot more. Like, you know, if you did that with monofilament back in the day, sometimes they'd swallow it so deep, you know. I used to always give my dad a hard time because, like, you know, when you're a teenager, you give your dad a hard time. And he's being this great dad, taking us out fishing every weekend, you know, spending all the extra money on boat gas and stuff like that to get my brother and I into the outdoors. And we're just giving him a hard time because we're teenagers. But we would pour our own baits. And, like, I was really into that as a teenager. I'd pour my own worms, and we'd just soak them with so much scent. And we'd get a bite, and, you know, you'd set the hook. My dad had grown up, like, doing some type of salmon fishing where you get a bite and you'd feed them line. So he did all these bass, dude. And he'd open that bell and let them eat it and feed them line. And he'd wait a good 30 seconds and he'd set the hook. And the fish would be like jumping when he set the hook. Could never miss him. But
yeah, back in the day, I mean, real early on before I got into bass fishing, one of my neighbors, I swear they bash fish three times a year. It was June, July, and August, full moons, Roosevelt, Westy worms. And we'd
That's
go
old
out
school
there.
Right there.
Yeah, old school, Westy worms. And that little tail hook, I mean, I had no clue what was going on, but it didn't matter because those things would be choked. I mean, you're like cutting those tail hooks out of those fish, and you're just like sitting there pulling, you know, mono glow strand and black lights. And then next thing you know, like you said, a fish is jumping or literally like almost pulling the rod out of your hand. You're like, oh yeah, I got one. Like
in all the years of Westy worms, there's never been an aggressive bite on one ever.
No kidding. I've never caught a fish on one.
Really?
Well, I just, you know, they were kind of done with when I started. Yeah.
But the most non-aggressive bites, pressure bites all the time on them.
So. Just load up on that little tiny hook in the back. And I don't know how many fish got killed by those baits, but they choked them.
Yeah, they were pretty effective for sure.
When's the last time you threw one?
It's been a long time, but that used to be like a staple. I mean, that was tied on all the time.
How many tournaments have you won on them?
A lot of night tournaments, a lot of summertime tournaments on them. At night, you'd throw black and yellow, and during the day, you'd throw the red or the purple with the red stripe. What a stupid-looking bait, right?
It looks crazy. It looks like a gimmick.
Yep, but I mean, it would catch suspended fish like no other. I'm sure it still does, just nobody uses them.
Would it spin on the fall or just fall straight?
It would just fall straight down and just do nothing. I mean, it was so simple. And I remember a tournament years ago, I was using paper graphs of all things. It cost you like $20 a day to run paper graphs.
On paper. That's classic.
But
dude,
we were catching suspended fish on Westy worms, and it was just amazing. I would never run the paper like when I was pre-fishing because it cost too much.
That's funny, dude.
So, but those things would wear out. The paper, the little thing on the paper graph would wear out and make a mess. Things have come a long ways.
Dude,
so
yeah.
I'm kind of aging myself talking about
doubling
those
up on the old school.
Yep.
Paper graphs and Westy worms.
It was gas money and paper money from your co-anglers back in the day. Bring a roll, dude.
Yep.
That's crazy. Interesting. So,
have you ever been in a boat with paper graphs? Have you ever fished with them?
No. Or Westy worms, dude.
Yeah. Yeah.
I'm interested by both.
Yeah.
That's pretty. You think, obviously, paper graphs don't stack up, but do you think a Westy worm would catch them now as good as it used to?
I know it would, actually. I know it would. Yeah, they just don't get used. I mean, and you know, it's hard to come across the good ones. I think I've got a few of the good ones left, but people have tried to copy it and stuff, but they're just not what they originally
were.
That's
interesting. Yeah, you wondered, such a simple thing, but you know, you think it'd be easy to copy, but they just haven't hit on the head.
Yeah, yeah, it was fantastic how they'd catch them though.
How many people you think, you know, thought they were snagged on a 10-pounder with a Westy worm?
Guaranteed, tons of them. Guarantee it.
Oh yeah.
I got some Westy worms for you. They're tucked away.
Imagine that, Alex. We were talking earlier about how much tackle Josh has, and Alex was like, yeah, I got a lot too. But
Alex has a lot. Yeah. And he's been bass fishing for less than 10 years, and you know, seriously, and he's got a crazy amount. I'm impressed.
I have a whole closet full of Tackle Warehouse shirts to prove it.
Do you opt out now?
No, still get them. If I'm spending $150, I want my shirt.
Fair, and they'll gladly give it to you, dude.
I guess that's my problem. I don't even have one t-shirt.
Yeah,
so
you need to get on it.
Yeah. Rob, that's good, dude. Yeah, man, if you can catch fish and keep it simple.
Dude, I'm so generic, it's unbelievable when it comes to tackle and I don't know.
Are you hunting?
I keep it pretty simple.
Interesting.
I mean, I've got the right stuff, but not a lot of it, you know. So do you agree, Alex?
Yeah, I mean you got what you need. You have what you need.
Right.
It's quality stuff. Right. Just like his fishing stuff is quality that he's got, but he just doesn't have the nonsense that is surrounding us in my garage right now.
This is awesome, I think, but it's just, I don't know. I'm just real simple and use the same stuff everywhere, you know, so.
But it'd be different if you were still
If I was still fishing like on the, if I was fishing at like, I don't know if I could fish at Josh's level, but if I was trying to do that, yeah, it would be different. But I still wouldn't be like Alex. I mean, Alex is...
I got problems.
I remember him telling me a story about he was with a guide and the guy ran out of worms. He goes, how could that happen? Well, I'm that guide that happens with.
That's funny. Rob's the one that's turning backwards and biting her head off and stuff.
Well, I'm doing that. And I'm like, oh, this color looks good. I haven't used it in 10 years.
Just moving
to
the
good.
Next.
I shouldn't admit that, but it's
the
truth.
No, dude, as long as they're catching fish, man. Right. And they are. So, all right. So, we've been going on this topic for a while. We'll hit a couple more quick points. We'll move on. And if you guys have a story, interject with it. If not, no big deal. But another thing fishermen, I don't think, do often, myself anyways. I'm always the first one to complain when I'm at a lake for a week and it's windy every day. But after, when the weather's good every day, I'm never like, oh man, we had just great weather this week. I'm so thankful it was 75 degrees and sunny every day. Especially when you go to big bodies of water. Lake Mead, St. Clair, Great Lakes, lakes like that. So it's kind of just kind of funny for me anyways. Like I take it for granted when it's good. Like I expect it to always be good. But the minute it starts blowing, I'm complaining.
Yeah, I know you guys talked about the U.S. Open already, but I was thankful for the good weather as fishing on the AAA side. I don't think it bothered me nearly as much. Like if I'm in my own boat and I'm in control. But when you're with somebody else, there's a little bit of a pucker factor when you're not sure. Yeah.
The unknown,
like, yeah,
whether
like,
you can drive or not.
Can this guy drive? What kind of boat are we in? I mean, just all the unknowns of I've seen the worst Lake Mead has to offer, and luckily we got really good weather for all 3 days, and I mean it still tore boats up. I mean, literally motors coming off and
that
stuff
would scare
like that.
Me to death.
I was
no kidding, man.
Oh my goodness.
Yeah.
I ordered a new life vest, one of the ones that don't inflate. Just because
he brought her, he brought an old school one.
Yeah.
Just because I don't know. I guess I'm getting older. I got kids, stuff like that. But it bothers me more than it used to. So I was definitely thankful for the weather at Lake Mead. But yeah, I know what you're saying. You don't even think about it until later on.
Yeah, yeah. I don't know. I take it for granted. Okay. Last thing. You guys ever been out on the water and something on your boat breaks, but it breaks at just like the best possible time? Like when you get back to the ramp or when you just got into cell service or something like that. Does that ever happen to you guys?
Makes me think of the worst possible time it broke.
Well, tell me, dude. What was it?
I fished a term on Lake Powell years ago and we were going out of Waweep and I blew a motor up in the end of the San Juan. That's an hour and 45-minute run, full throttle.
Yeah, that's a pretty bad place to blow a motor, dude.
Yeah, so Mark Yamamoto was up there. That's Derek's younger brother. And he went up that night and hooked my boat up and towed it back.
On pad?
On pad, in the dark. This is like the early days of GPS.
By himself?
By himself. I woke up the next morning. This was a Bassmaster tournament, so it was a three-day deal, and that was the first day. I woke up the next morning. My jacket, everything I asked for was laid out right in front of where I was staying there. And, I mean, what a cool deal.
What a guy. And he wasn't fishing the tournament.
No, he's never
fished. He lived up there.
No, he lived down here, but he would come up and just help Derek and help the guys because it was kind of a Yamamoto deal being out of Page there, you know?
Sure.
Not that they didn't sponsor it, but they, you know, they wanted to show out well.
Yep.
And pretty funny how that was. But what a hookup, huh?
That's cool. Yeah, well, those were your boys, man. I mean, you fished for those guys, and that's what, yeah. That's not just like a 5 mile tow. That's insane, dude.
Yeah. But that's what he lives for. That's how Mark was. He would live for the
good guy,
the crazy stuff like that. So
those motors love towing too.
Oh yeah. probably didn't do.
He's about to blow up his motor.
Probably
just
didn't
to
do
go to yours.
The boat he was in much good either.
I guess probably better on pad. If he would have towed it 100 miles off pad, yeah his lower.
But they had it.
Well,
I mean,
just change it out right there.
It was evident they grew up there because they had it down. They would carry a little teeny prop with them, and it would be like a, you know, I don't even know what pitch it was, but
like a 19 or 21.
19 or a 20 pitch prop, and wow. It would literally, you could get them up on pad and do pretty good with it. So
that's cool. I need to learn how to do that and make sure I got a rope for that situation, man. I mean, I broke down last year again. Now we're going back. This is just us, man. We're going back to all the times we broke down. We shouldn't, but happened to me twice. Random things. Just freak deals, but both of them like 40, 50 miles from the ramp. But I had one. I was fishing the Sabine River. I've had in this one particular marsh on the Sabine River, I've had like three instances. And I've never caught him in the tournament in this marsh, but I just, you know, it's like a pipe dream. Like I know they live back there, and if you line it up right, you could catch them and win the tournament in that marsh. No one fishes it. It's the middle of a bunch of, you know, I don't know. I guess a bunch of oil companies own all these marshes and stuff, and it's just a gnarly spot to get in and out of.
Is there stuff you can run into or what?
Oh yeah, pipes in the water.
Oh god,
and it's tidal.
Nothing big.
Just a pipe.
Just pipes, steel pipes. Dude. And you know, who knows what's in the pipes and all. You know, dude, it's a disaster. And it's just a super shallow marsh and it's tidal. So
do you run it on plane?
You have to, because you can't if you're off pad. You don't. It's too shallow, dude. So my buddy that had told me about this several years ago lived down there and fished out of a John boat and just knew these marshes like the back of his hand. And he's like, I never had a big boat back there, but, you know, let's try it. And we did, and we got in there, and we did some damage the first time we went in there. Actually, I had a brand new boat and ended up doing a bunch of damage to it. We got out of there.
I thought you meant you did damage to the fish.
So did I.
Well, we
I was
did
like,
too.
What'd you catch?
We did, dude. We did. You know, once we finally were there in it. But long story short on that one, that's not where I'm going with this. But, I mean, yeah, we ended up doing – I needed a new lower unit. I had a brand new boat. And that – we got so stuck that – and the wind was blowing so hard that when we were trying to get unstuck, there was so much mud flying. And it's that nasty, sticky, oily mud that stinks and sticks to you. Like, we were covered with it. The boat was covered with it. It was a disaster.
Swamp mud.
Anyway, so I do all that, do damage to my boat, come back, fish the tournament, lost a giant fish back there, caught a couple that was like, it wasn't worth it. And so I come back the next time we go there, a couple of years later, and I get in there and fish. I caught them really good somewhere else this day of the tournament. So I get back in there just to check it out, don't catch them. So, but my motor starts to sound kind of funny. And there was just one year where these motors, there was one little, I don't know if it was like, it was something in the fuel system. It wasn't like a problem with the motor manufacturer. It was like wherever they were getting this part would tear, and the motor would start getting too much fuel. And when that would start happening, you know that like you could hear it in the motor. And when you hear it starting to act this way, you've got like very limited time. You might be able to get on pad. And if you can get on pad, it'll be fine as long as you're running. But if you let off and get off pad, you're done and you're dead in the water. And I could hear it acting this way as I'm going back into this area. And there's only one little deep spot where you can kind of get off pad. I'm sorry. I'm going to jack this whole story up. No one's going to understand what I'm saying. Motor's fine and I'm running in there. I get off pad in the one deep spot where I can kind of get my bearings and figure out, okay, how am I going to run through this marsh? Well, I get off pad in this deep spot and it's starting to sputter, and I knew it was happening. So I'm like, oh crap, dude. There's no cell phone service where I'm at or anything, and no one can get to you or tow you out because it's too shallow. So airboat would have had to do it. So instead of going in there, I turned around and went out and
still on pad.
I could get on pad one more time because like when I got off pad, it was just starting to do it. So I get on pad, but go back the other way, back towards the ramp. But I'm texting the mechanics, the service crew on my way back, like, hey, I'm coming in. Hopefully I can make it to the dock. I got this problem. They all know what it is. No big deal. They're going to fix it. But, dude, I made it there, and the motor died as soon as I got to the dock, man. As soon as, you know, you got off pad and it stopped getting all that extra fuel, the motor died.
And so, how far of a run back was it?
20 miles.
That's
you know,
a pretty good run.
But, dude, it could have happened, like, it could have happened in the marsh. You know, beyond that point.
Yeah. You
and would've. I would have been in such a bad spot.
Yep.
Like with banjos playing.
Oh, yeah, dude. And
the Sabine River.
It wouldn't have been a cell phone ringtone banjo either, dude, because there was no cell phone service. Yeah. It would have been a real banjo. But yeah, pretty good time in there. I was really thankful for that.
Yeah. Have you had any experiences with?
No, they've all been
breakdowns?
Bad.
All
no, bad breakdowns. I haven't had enough breakdowns to have a bad or a good breakdown, but yeah, I can't think.
All bad ones. No, they're normally not good, dude. That one we were able to laugh about. You know, once in a while you can laugh about them, but all right, guys. Well, let's shift gears one more time. Alex spent, how long did you spend as a deckhand on a boat in San Diego tuna fishing?
I did 3 years, like 3 summers when I was going to school out there, but I started fishing out there when I was 8 and then fished several times a summer ever since growing up.
That's cool, right? So you know it extremely well. In those 3 years, what are a couple of the craziest things you saw, either with the clients that you had on the boat or, you know, what was an average day like for you guys, like an average trip? What were the hours? Like you wouldn't sleep much when you're on these trips, right?
No, yeah. I worked on a boat that we ran one crew, so if we were working – you know, basically we just ran. So we'd pick people up, you know, 8 o'clock at night, go out, drive all night, fish the whole next day. And then typically we did 2-day trips. So we'd spend the whole next night on the ocean, do it again, drop people off and change. But of those nights that we'd spend out, I mean, we'd get up about 5 a.m, start getting stuff ready, start fishing. If you're lucky, you got an hour nap during the day. And then, you know, when the sun would go down, everybody eat dinner and we'd start cutting fish. So if it was a good day of fishing, we'd be cutting fish till sometimes the next morning. And probably average, you know, you'd finish up 1 o'clock in the morning, have to, by the time you scrub the boat, do that kind of stuff. And a lot of times by the time you went to bed, you know, 1, 2 a.m, you still had an hour night shift of driving before you got back up at 5. So,
oh, you'd take turns.
Yeah, so we take turns driving, doing that kind of stuff. So great money for a college kid, terrible per hour if you start looking at how much you work.
Interesting.
And how you were telling me this the other day, I think, about how many days on you were. Were you on like for 30 days in a row or something like that?
Yeah, I think the longest one we ever did was like 28 days, but typically we're somewhere between like 2 and 3 weeks. We'd go straight, literally just picking people up. I mean, you have an hour off between trips.
So you're essentially living on the boat. And
I would leave. Yeah.
So you're not spending any money either.
That's a great college job.
Out of trouble.
Yeah,
basically.
Out of trouble.
It was tough to spend money. Yeah, it was tough to spend money when you were actually working, and it was a little rough when you get off the boat as a, you know, 18, 19, 20-year-old kid, and you got, you know, 10 grand in your pocket, but tackle shops are, like, waving 20% off coupons at deckhands, like, you know, just come here, like little crack dealers in the alley. But
That's funny.
That's, you know, some of the money go there. But, yeah, it worked out great because it was good money for the summers. That's when the best fishing was anyways. I mean, they'll run year-round, but I'd go out there as soon as I got off school and come back right before it, you know, started. Maybe make one trip home.
The whole summer.
Maybe make one trip home over the course of the summer. But, I mean, I lived out there. Lived on the boat. It was nice. We ran one crew, so if we weren't working, the boat was in dock. So I could just stay there. No food, no place to stay. You know, all that was covered. So it worked out really, really good for me, but It was a crazy couple summers for sure.
Did you ever, you know, you spend so much time with other guys on the boat. Did you guys ever like argue and get in spats? Like you'd think that sometimes people wouldn't get along. It's a lot of time together.
Yeah, typically the crews. I mean, there were a few guys that would come and go and stuff like that. But it was more the longer you went into one of those runs, the less patience you'd have with your passengers.
Oh, the clients.
Yeah, you get 3 weeks into not sleeping, and it's like, you know, somebody, you have the same things. If your options are like a breakfast sandwich, a breakfast burrito, eat burgers for lunch. Like I remember one time I bought Fruit Loops and some passenger got into my Fruit Loops after being out there for like 2 months. And it was like, what the hell? Like, I mean, it was the end of the world to me that somebody was eating my Fruit Loops. Like I was ready to kill somebody because like, no, this isn't for you. You go eat that food over there. Like this little something different was so important to me. I was ready to
fight
somebody.
Looking forward to eating them so much.
Yes,
after.
And then they were gone. You know, like I literally went down there and a couple people had eaten my Fruit Loops, and I would have been ready to fight somebody.
That's hilarious. Is that boat still running?
Actually, same name, different owners.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was the Constitution. When I was working out there, a different guy owns it, but it's still out there. A lot of the guys who I worked with are still out there, and I was one of the few. I did it for a few years and bounced, but a lot of those guys are...
They make careers out of it.
Still running, yeah. Yeah, I mean,
it's a hard-working career, man. Wow. Yeah.
Ocean gets in your blood. It's a...
I can't imagine that.
It was tough when I came back. I mean, that's why I got into bass fishing. I did a little bit of, you know, some other stuff poking around, but it was just... I had to fill that void. I mean, it was every... I look forward to every summer going out there, and I mean, it was work, but it wasn't work. It was one of those few jobs that... I mean, it was long hours, and there were times when it sucked just like any other job, but I mean, I look forward to fishing, helping people catch fish, just the whole experience. And then all of a sudden I came back, you know, kind of settled down. I was working, and it was just like, what do I do now? I mean, I was young. I just got married. I couldn't afford to go fishing all the time. Those trips are expensive in San Diego, you know, so it's like I had to find something closer to home that I could fill that void with a little bit. But
do you miss the actual tuna, eating it?
I mean, we
get sick of it when you're out there.
Yeah, it's different now because you know, you eat sushi and stuff like that. I mean, a lot of it's different, but like we literally, I mean, you put it on the boat, cut it, chill it, and it's there. It's different. You can't even go to sushi restaurants and have like sashimi and stuff because, I mean, it sounds gross, but you literally be like cutting fish and you like
got throwing it in your mouth.
You got the soy sauce out there. You throw a piece of fresh fish that's, I mean, it's been killed earlier that day in chilled salt water, and it's as prime as it gets. Throw a chunk in your mouth, a little soy sauce, and off you go. And then you come back and it's just different. You can't get that fresh, you know.
Yeah,
but
that's gotta be good.
The tuna part of it, I mean, the fishing out there, it's different because typically it's tough to get the first bite, like get those fish to go. But typically they go crazy. Like the fight starts when you get the bite. You know, like it's not like bass fishing. It's so hard most of the time to get a bite. And then a lot of times, depending on what you're doing, it's almost a foregone. Maybe you lose them, something like that. But it's not a fight to get them into the boat.
Not
maybe
like
a
that,
big
dude.
One on drop shot or something like that. But I love that, like you hooking a fish and being like, all right, now it's game on.
It's a different
feeling. It's different. I mean, from the tuna, the big tuna, the sharks. I mean, the sharks kind of throw another, you know, little danger level there, but. I think that was something I miss is that, like, I mean, those things are trying to hurt you as much as you're trying to hurt them, and it's funny to watch guys get their butt kicked by them when they don't know what they're doing. So
if you can't think of anything or don't want to throw them under the bus, that's fine. But what's like the most bonehead thing you ever saw like a client do?
I mean, there was one group that I can think of, and it was like 16 guys. And they were on a bachelor party.
Oh boy.
They had spent the morning, a whole day before they got on the boat in Tijuana, and they were hammered. I mean, just hammered.
Coming out.
Getting on the boat, they were hammered. Mm. And we're like, this is going to be terrible. And it was rough. I mean, we knew it was going to be rough. And we're telling them, like, hey, we don't think this is going to be good. And, of course, they're like, we're fine. Go. We're going.
We're tough.
Sorry. We're like, all right, we're going out to the butterfly. And we get out there, and I'm taking wheel watch, and this is, I mean, solid. We're a couple weeks into a deal, but I mean, I'm like standing up at the wheel. So if you fall asleep, you fall over and wake yourself up like that level of tired, you know, it's like 1 a.m. I'm sitting there staring at this radar, and up in the wheelhouse, which is a whole floor above the main deck, all of a sudden I'm looking out the front window, and there are three dudes in the window and then gone in the middle of the night. I'm like, I'm thinking I'm delirious.
Yeah, you're
I'm
seeing
like,
things.
And then here we go again. And then I'm like, what? They're up there bow jumping in the middle of the night.
No.
Bow jumping in the middle of the night, these three dudes. And one of them like almost breaks his leg coming down.
Oh my God.
So it just kept getting better. Like we had to kick him off the front of the boat, make announcements like, hey, you're not allowed to go up there. You can't do this. You're going to die. Like, I mean, literally, if you go over, the water's fairly warm, but you won't make it to the next morning if you go over. I mean, you'll be hypothermic and drowned, you know, if you go over, and we're not going to find you in the middle of the night. So we put him on the back deck, you know. Next thing you know, like, I'm getting ready. My wheel watch ends. I'm going down there, and these dudes got fillet knives back there. Our fillet knives. And they're two of them are biting the heads off of live sardines, and the other one's, like, throwing them up in the air and trying to, like, samurai sword them. Like, like kids, and they're drunk, you know? So then we had to take all the knives away. We ended up having to lock these guys in the galley, like close the doors. Like you can't come out, you know? So the next morning rolls around, and of course, I mean, weather's bad. We're going out there, and 13 of the 16 of them are like about to die. I mean, just puking all over the place, laying on the floor. And the other three are like, they're fine. We're good. Let's just keep going, you know? And, we literally had to, it was like summer camp, freaking counselors had to go down and raid their bags, freaking take their alcohol away. We ended up spending the next night, we had to turn around because the weather was so rough, none of them could stand up to begin with, spend the next night at the Coronado Islands. And it was kind of the little perfect revenge because they're all hung over as hell. So we finally, that next day, we pretty much spent the whole day going out there and coming back. We get to the islands. And the second captain's like, this is going to be hilarious, right? I'm like, oh, what's going on? So he's got all the lights on. He's got the squid lights on, whatever. And I'm sitting up there, and all of a sudden you hear whack. I'm like, what the heck is going on? Whack! Into the side of the boat. And he's like, just wait. Whack! These sea lions out there at the islands are so smart they chase the flying fish into the lights, and the flying fish's eyes are so big, they'll run into the side of the boat.
Hmm.
It's a metal boat, so it's loud. So all these guys are down in the bunk room just hearing like whack against the side of the boat, and these sea lions will knock those flying fish out and just scoop them up and go. So he's left the lights on for a couple hours just in – every few
to
minutes,
make him pay for
every
it.
Few minutes, you know, 5-10 minutes at the most, you just hear this whack, and they're all done. Like, somebody shut that thing up, you know, like my head hurts, this, that, the other thing. But yeah, it was hilarious. Those sea lions are incredible at what they can do. But yeah, they chase those flying fish right into the side of the boat.
Wow.
They almost knock themselves out. They scoop them up. But those that group as a whole, I mean, there was a lot of stupid stuff that happened out there, but it was just a disaster from the beginning. It was adult babysitting and a 2-day offshore trip turned into a half day at the Coronado Islands between running around to make sure they didn't jump off the boat in the middle of the night.
Did the 3 of the 16, did they stay strong the whole time, or did they end up going down too?
Yeah, I mean, they were complaining. Like, yeah. I mean, they kind of took it as a group, you know. Like,
that's crazy.
We screwed up, but I think they all kind of
did they ever
realized,
catch any fish?
We caught some fish the next day. I mean, yeah. it turned into a decent trip, but it was a 2-day offshore trip. Was literally like half day at the Coronado Islands. We caught some yellowtail, had some fun, you know, that kind of stuff. But it
You're
was not
have to adjust on the fly for
not. Yeah, I mean, yeah. It was just one of those deals where, I mean, we were talking like 8 to 10 footers out on the butterfly, and I mean those guys couldn't stand up when it was flat. So we were
dude, that's some dangerous stuff.
We were turning
you know?
Around,
yeah. Wow, that's a. That's a handful right there.
It was never dull. It was never dull out on the ocean for sure.
That's fun. That's cool, man. Right on. We're just past an hour. I'd like to hear some more of those, but we'll have you on again if that's cool.
Yeah, right on. I'd love to.
Yeah, right on. We'll appreciate you making the time, man. And any thoughts, any final thoughts before we shut this thing down?
No, man.
Either one of you guys?
No, I'm excited for you guys. This is cool. This is a cool podcast. I'm looking forward to seeing where it goes. I appreciate you know, being on here at the beginning, but I've heard a lot of feedback from people already. They're enjoying it, and I'm just excited to see where it goes for you guys.
Cool.
Thanks. We don't know what we're doing yet, man, but
trying to figure
talking
it out.
Fishing yep. is pretty fun. Yep.
Well, thanks for coming on, Alex. Appreciate it.
Appreciate it, man.
No problem.
Thanks for listening to the podcast, guys. If you liked it, make sure you leave us a 5-star review on iTunes, and we'll have another one coming for you next week. See you next time.